This week on The Photographer's Perspective, we talk about everything you ever wanted to know about filters with Matt Theobald from Breakthrough Photography. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transform the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, welcome. I am here with Matt Theobald from Breakthrough Filters and Colorado Tripods. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate you inviting me onto the podcast.
Of course. You guys have been kind of a big deal the last couple of years here in photography, and we've been really, really fortunate to have you coming with us on our events. You were in Oregon with us, you and Joe, right?
Yeah.
And Graham showed up, one of the big wigs, and you guys were awesome in Oregon. You know, first tell us just a little bit about the company. What do you guys do? Or two companies, really. Give us just a little background.
Sure. Yeah. So Breakthrough Photography is kind of about 4.5-5 years old now. And we have been making the world's sharpest and most color neutral filters. And we're photographers here. So we know what filters need to do. So by filters, I'm talking about polarizing filters. I'm talking about neutral density filters, graduated filters, kind of all the things that landscape photographers in particular use on almost a daily basis, or it can really up the photography game, if you really know how to and when to use filters appropriately. So we're photographers. We're not run by big men in suits. We're run by photographers that run around shooting. So, so we appreciate the fact that color neutrality is really the big thing with filters. And it needs to be durable. It needs to be able to withstand the demands of professional photographers all around the world. So we've been extremely successful with the filters, and we're the number one best-selling filter brand on Amazon and B&H and things like that. And so we're really proud of our products. Our polarizing filters, in particular, is incredibly color neutral, and so that is kind of our selling point. And then about a year ago, we launched Colorado Tripod Company. So that is kind of for fun, almost. We're not really in it to make tons of money. We just noticed in the tripod industry, nothing's really changed in a long time. Decades, really. Tripods have been tripods. Ball heads have been ball heads. There's been very little changing in the industry. And so we, really right stuff. Obviously, those guys, they make great stuff. Gitzo as well. Those guys have been around forever. They make fantastic stuff. And we're basically trying to enter the market by providing incredibly stable tripods and ball heads at an incredibly affordable price. So you won't be seeing, $1,000 here, $1,100 there for a tripod. We're pricing very well because, we can. Carbon fibers come down a lot in price in the last few decades. And so they're really, in our eyes, there's no need to be charging over $1,000 for a tripod. So,
we work with tons of photographers that, are between our instructors and attendees and everyone else. And that's kind of the common thread that I hear is like, these Colorado tripods are basically as good as something like a Really Right Stuff for less than half the price, and even less than that. And from what I've seen, they're really good and have been super popular and completely selling out too, right?
Yeah, we can't keep them in stock right now. So it's kind of right. A logistical issue that we're trying to deal with here. But no, the reception has been overwhelming. And a lot of positivity. And so we're just trying to run with that momentum.
Yeah. So next week, you and the team are going to be with us in Yosemite for Out of Yosemite, which I'm just super excited about with the people that we have here. Just some of the legends of photography that will be joining us as our instructors. And it's just going to be a blast. But you guys are going to be there helping to support the thing. Tell us how you can help people while they're at the event.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of a recipe that I stumbled upon really in when I was doing an event with Sony last year. I went.
And actually, let me interrupt you and just say that you guys are going to do this in Moab and Acadia as well. So you guys have really, I appreciate it, made a commitment and are really going to be helping our people through all these. So if anyone's considering going to one of those as well, you guys are going to be there. So, yeah, all right, absolutely. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No problem at all. Yeah. So I kind of stumbled upon this recipe when I was working on an event with Sony. And, you know, I was just there. It was a rushed thing, so I didn't really know what to do. I just knew I wanted to take filters and kind of be there. And then what ended up happening is I was thinking to myself, it was very workshop heavy as well, kind of like the Out of Chicago conferences are. And I'm like, why would I sit here behind my booth? I could actually go out there, take filters, and actually help people learn in the field. And so it was received incredibly well. It went amazingly well. Everyone loved the fact that I brought filters to take, to use for the events, because there's always people, you know, that don't have the correct gear or don't have, or just want to try it out, you know. And that's where it began. And we did it, like you mentioned, in Oregon. And again, it was very successful. So I'm just going to do the same. You know, we'll be there. Joseph Roybal and I. Joseph is one of our Team Breakthrough professionals. We work very closely with Joseph on product development, other things like that. He's going to be joining me, and we will be there the entire conference. We'll be bringing demo filters, CPLs, NDs, graduateds, anything you can think of. And we will be out there with you shooting, and we will be there to help you learn. If there's a polarizer that you want to get, how do I use this? You know, where is this applicable to me in my landscape photography? Those are the kind of questions we love to answer. We love to kind of have those light bulb moments go on with participants using filters for the first time. If you're trying to do long exposure for the first time, things like that. So we're there to support the participants. We're there to support the instructors however we can, and just try and bring our expertise and share it. That's what we love to do.
Yeah, using filters is just like any other piece of equipment in photography, where it's like the first time you use it, even the first 20 times you use it, it's like you're still thinking about it, and you want to get to that point where you don't even have to think about how it works anymore, so that all your brain power can go to composition and being in the right spot and get your timing right and all of that. And I think that's the advantage to have the pros that we have, instructors, and the pros on your team that will be helping people to make it so it's not 20 times until they get there.
Well, exactly. And you know, you said it best, like learning your equipment. I don't think enough emphasis is put on learning your equipment, you know, being able to utilize it quickly and know where the menus are and know how to do all of this. You know, the light changes so fast, as any photographer knows. And so it has to become second nature, just like changing your white balance setting or doing anything on your lens or camera. Same with filters, like which filter do I need in this situation? You know, that we want that thought process to be almost second nature. You know, it's already in your mind which filter is needed for this situation. That just takes time.
Yeah, this is really strange advice, but this is what I do, and I recommend it to everybody that comes on our things, which is I practice. It actually reminds me of like my son. He's 7. He's like, why do I got to go to soccer practice? It's like, you're never going to be good unless you practice. But like when I practice, like if I've got a new piece of equipment, I do it here in my office, and it's like, okay, let's pretend that all of a sudden the light's gone way dim. I need to change my filter. Maybe I want to change a lens, and like, I just go through that and then maybe change a menu setting so that it just becomes second nature, especially when the light's changing quickly. Yeah.
And you know what? You can do this without a camera. You can do this walking down the street. Like, look at the light where you're just out walking your dog or whatever. Look at the surroundings and go, okay, what filter could be useful here? Is it blue sky? Maybe a polarizer, you know? Am I walking next to a waterfall? Do I want to practice long exposure? If I was here with a camera, what would I be using? And just that thought process really, really helps when you do have your setup in front of you. you're giving yourself a head start.
So let's talk about that. Like, in what situations would you be like, all right, I'm really going to have a filter here? Because a lot of new photographers, you know, they buy maybe like a cheap UV filter that goes with it. And they go, all right, well, that's kind of, I'll just leave it on there all the time and don't think any more than that. And we know as experienced landscape photographers that they're critical to what you do.
Absolutely. We call it in the industry kind of a tripod tax. People do this thing when they start photography, they buy a cheap tripod, $30 from Amazon or something, and they get it and they use it once and they realize it's complete junk. And then they, you know, it kind of, it's that tax that the industry gets as a new photographer. And so people tend to do that with filters as well. And UV filters, you mentioned them. I'll just touch on them briefly. In modern day cameras systems, the UV protection is not necessary. They're just a lens protector. Would you rather break a $100 filter or a $2,000 lens? You know, that's your call, obviously. But really, the first filter that I recommend people start out with, particularly if they do a lot of landscape work, is look into getting a polarizer and learn what a polarizer does. And polarizers are incredibly powerful tools. And what's cool about a polarizer is you cannot duplicate that, or you cannot get that effect any other way. You cannot do it in Photoshop. You cannot do it in Lightroom. You need a polarizer on your lens to remove reflections, to boost the natural contrast that's there, particularly in the sky. You know, polarizers are very powerful in how they interact with the sky and anything wet or reflective. And you just cannot replace a polarizer in post-processing. So that's the first filter I would recommend that anyone who's new to filters or wants to learn more about filters to look into, followed by the ND filters, the neutral density filters. And those we can, you know, go talk all day about the different stops and the, you know, the use cases for how long you want your shutter speed, but essentially they are tools to reduce the overall exposure of your image. So that's a way that you can control your shutter speed. And so those two are really the go-to filters and the two that if I were new to photography, I would spend my time learning and researching and practicing with those.
And these are all screw-on type filters that you're talking about?
Well, we do screw-on. Screw-on is the easiest, for sure. They're lightest, they're smallest, they're easier to carry, they're easier to use in the field. But we also do square, 100 millimeter square and 150 millimeter square for those ultra-wide lenses that have the bulbous front elements. They don't have lens threads on them. So that's why you need those big square pieces of glass to get filters over there. But we will be bringing primarily circular filters to these conferences. We will have a few squares on hand if you want to come check them out, but mostly it will be circular filters. So, yeah.
Okay, great. And so those circular filters, I mean, talk about, you do like a split filter too, right? But those are then the square or rectangular ones. Is that right?
Yeah. So those are the graduated neutral density filters. And I would definitely, those are very useful. They're becoming less useful, just as the dynamic range of the cameras, you know, able to capture the detail in the brightest of brights and the detail in the darkest of darks in your composition. So essentially, cameras are getting much better at that, seeing into the brights, seeing into the darks, but they're still not perfect. They're still nothing like your eye. They're still not able to capture that massive dynamic range that particularly sunset, sunrise, those kind of areas, if you're dealing with rocks in the foreground, like in Oregon, that was what we were doing, you know, using GNDs, those graduated filters. There were dark rocks in the foreground and really bright sun. So how do you deal with that? How do you enable yourself to capture data in the brightest of brights and the darkest of darks, shadows? And the GNDs are how you do that. So they are split. So there's a dark half and a light half. So you would obviously put the dark half where you want to reduce the exposure in the sky almost exclusively. And then the light part is just clear. So you're not going to be losing any exposure or you're not going to be losing any dynamic range in the shadows. It's just going to kind of bring the balance back so that your camera can capture the best data.
Yeah, and people are kind of split on whether those are still necessary, like you say. But what's interesting is, like the polarizer, there's no way to duplicate it. If you need to slow down water, there's no way you can duplicate the neutral density filter. Like, you have to have those for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And I will say the GNDs, I am still a proponent of using them, because if I can choose to import my raw files into Lightroom or Photoshop with a GND or without, I'm going to have the best data. I'm going to have the cleanest, less noisy file. I'm going to have the best data to work with if in the shot with the GND. So sure, I mean, there's ways you can do that in post. In Lightroom, there's an easy slider that you can just bring a graduated filter in, and you know, you can go in depth like Sean Bagshaw and use luminosity masks and those kind of things. It's possible, but I would still rather import my files with the best quality data that I can get. And that's why I still use GNDs, even though my camera has an incredible dynamic
range. So if I go on Amazon and I just search for filters and I sort it by price, I could probably get, you know, a whole set of everything I needed for like $30 from China, you know, with a little air blower and everything else with it. Why don't I want to do that?
Oh man.
Or you could buy a new camera and it all comes with it, right? And it's like, oh, that's everything I'd ever need my whole life. But I've been down that route. Uh-huh.
And this is actually a question we get a lot from customers, because we are not the cheapest filter brand out there. We know that. We're on the higher end. And I use this analogy. If you just bought a Ferrari, would you go to Costco and buy the cheapest road tires you could get on that to put on that Ferrari? No, that would just be so ridiculous to do that. And yet that's what people are doing. They're buying these amazing cameras that are so capable, and they're putting these plastic or, you know, terrible glass filters, if they're even glass filters, on there. And that's kind of the way that I look at it. And people kind of go, yeah, I should equate the quality of my filter to the quality of my lens. And so people do. They buy these Chinese terrible filters on their $2,000 lens, and they say, like, it's terrible. I'm like, yes, it's terrible. Of course it's terrible. You know?
And what are they going to see? How do you know, oh man, this filter's no good? What's actually the difference? It's not just like name brand jeans. It's actually a big difference.
It is a big difference. I mean, in the cheapest of filters, you're not even going to see sharp focus. You're not going to be able to achieve that. Because the glass is, if it's even glass, it could be plastic, honestly. It could be a resin. It could be glass that's not treated. And so in the worst scenario, you're going to have a loss of sharpness. And particularly in the polarizing and the ND filters, you're going to have these horrible color casts. And color cast means that every shot you take with that filter, when you import it into Lightroom or whatever program that you use, you're going to see a tint to your image. And that is, yes, you can fix it. Obviously, you can adjust the temperature in post, but that's a destructive editing technique. What if you have a blue filter or a filter that gives you a blue color cast? And what happens? You can adjust that. Of course you can. But what you're going to do is you're going to impact any blue pixel in that image that wants to stay blue, like the sky or the water. And in some cases, you may even want to boost that natural blue. Instead, you're going to be forced into a situation where you have to reduce it or affect it. And that's why it's a destructive technique. Our glass is tempered glass. It's the best glass in the industry. It's from Germany. Those guys know how to do optical glass for sure. And then we treat it with nano coating, 16 layers of nano coating. So if you actually spill like water on one of our filters, you will see it pool like on water off a duck's back. It's that same thing. So it resists water, it resists dust and dirt. And it's really the color neutrality. So there's the durability piece, right? Do you want it to break the first time you use it? If you spend $30, it probably will. Do you want it to be able to go to Iceland with you, to go into the high Arctic, to go into the Namibian desert? Yes, obviously you do if you're serious about photography and using these filters. And so there's that piece. Then there's the image quality piece. And this is obviously the more important piece. And that's where quality of the coatings and the color neutrality comes in, and the lack of color cast. And we even test our, if you go on our website, you'll see a transmission test that we did with our best competitors. And, you know, it's like we have a spectrometer in our workshop that we put these filters in, and it measures their transmission chart throughout the optical or throughout the light spectrum, the visible light spectrum. And the goal is to get a flat line, right? That means it's perfectly neutral throughout the color spectrum. And the reality is most are not. And that was our biggest thing when we started Breakthrough, is we want to make the world's most sharpest and color neutral filters.
So specifically in Yosemite, like what things are we going to be shooting for there that that we'll want filters for?
Yeah, so Yosemite is definitely, I'm not going to pretend it's the easiest place to use filters. There's a lot of canyon walls and trees and things that certainly would make graduated filters kind of difficult to use. But for sure, you know, rivers, wet rocks, reflections, nice skies, CPLs and NDs for sure will be very useful. For exploring the valley. I mean, there's rivers, there's skies, there's anywhere where there's a river or a reflective surface, you'll want to definitely experiment with a polarizer. Any distracting reflections essentially is what that is for. Playing around with long exposure techniques, certainly when shooting the, you know, Yosemite has some of the most iconic waterfalls on Earth. And so play around with long exposure there. I mean, I'm definitely going to be doing that with some NDs, 3 and 6 stop NDs. But also GNDs may be necessary. They're, you know, being in a valley, that's going to create lots of very high contrast situations. You're going to have very, very dark foregrounds. You're going to have very bright highlights in the sky. And so although it may be difficult, there may be some time where, you know, I'm throwing a GND on there. If I'm shooting the meadow or something and there's a lot of shadow in the foreground and a lot of bright sky. So that NDs and CPLs there are going to be really our go-to main focus in Yosemite.
Right. Can you explain for someone that's kind of new to using neutral density filters? Like I've talked to people and, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to have to get, you know, a 3-6 stop filter, like you say, and they go, oh, you know, I don't even understand why you would need that. I'll shoot a F22 but that's not even going to do it sometimes. Right. Would you explain that to people?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. And that is the only way that you can kind of fake that effect is by going to somewhere like F22. But that's very situationally dependent. You cannot always rely on that. And, you know, what if you want to, one of my favorite shots that I took in this last year was at a lake in the mountains in Colorado. And it was over a 5-minute exposure. And what was happening is it was a black day. I mean, here in Colorado, we get thunderstorms in the summer. And, you know, it was so gray. It was so dark. It was just, there was no photography to be had unless I had thought to throw on my 15-stop neutral density filter and shoot a long, long exposure. And there was lightning happening over this mountain range. And I just couldn't shoot it any other way that was going to give me something I was going to be proud of and happy with. So I shot that, and then the mountains are actually being lit by the over the course of that 5 minutes, the lightning flashes that's creating that light that's bouncing off the mountains. So yeah, essentially it basically makes your creativity come alive. You can really go nuts with kind of experimenting. It gives you so much creative freedom. And essentially, your lens has an optimum working range. You don't typically want to be shooting an F22 unless you have to. So you typically, for landscape work, unless you're going to be doing, you know, extended kind of focus area, you're going to be wanting to be around F8 through F11. That's kind of where your lens is going to be sharpest and best. So to achieve F11, F8, whatever your desired thing is, your shutter speed is what's going to create those long exposures. So if you want to maintain that F8, F11, you're going to need another way to get that longer exposure. And that basically means your camera is kind of open, taking the photo for longer periods of time. A long exposure really can be anything under 1/60th of a second, all the way up to, you know, 5 minutes, like I mentioned. And so there's various creative ways that you can utilize even 1/3 of a second. Actually, when I'm on the coast, 1/3 of a second is where I love to be. And people often don't think of that as long exposure, but it really is. getting those waves coming in through the rocks and things like that. Just a third of a second makes a big difference when the water is moving fast. Otherwise, you know, six stop is a good starting place. That's typically the one that I recommend. In Yosemite, the water, I don't know what the weather is going to be like. I don't know if we'll have running water, how much of it, you know, that kind of thing. But it's not going to be moving as fast as, say, a wave crashing. So probably three and six stop are going to be the ones that we go to just to experiment. And it's really a game of experimentation and learning your style, what shutter speed or what, how, do you prefer the third of a second? Do you prefer the minute? Do you prefer the 5 minutes? You know, that's a very creative decision. And these tools just give you the option to play around with it.
Yeah. And people, you know, they'll say, well, I'll just change those settings. And I've been in situations where it's like, you can go down to F22, you can be at ISO 100 or even like 50, like down like that. And your shutter speed's going to be like 1/1000th of a second. It's going to freeze everything. And if you try to change it manually to make it more like a half a second or a full second, your exposure is just going to be pure bright white. And so the only way to bring it down is with the ND filter.
Exactly. If you do it in camera without filters, you're very limited in your scope. And like you said, if it's a bright day, if you're dealing with, you know, bright subjects, you're just not going to be able to do it. There's no way. And like I said, you typically don't want to be at F22 if you can avoid it, because your lens is primarily the sharpest in the middle of the range there between F8, F11, that kind of area.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have advice for people as far as like how to carry their filters, how to clean their filters, some best practices for people?
Yeah, definitely. And the first thing I always do, and I do it before and after every shoot, is use those little air puffers, those blowers. Those are great. And the reason that you do not, and I see this happen all the time, people blow on their filters. And we do not recommend that. I do not recommend that, because you're actually blowing moisture. You're not just blowing air from your mouth. I hate to say it, but you're not. And so please don't blow on your filters. Use an air puffer. That will get all of the bigger particles off. And then the second stage is to use a cleaning solution. There are many out there. We recommend Eclipse, I think it's called. You can get it on Amazon. That's the one that we use in-house, and that's the one we recommend. And then just a nice soft lens cloth to get the kind of hard bits that didn't come off when you puffed it with air. That's standard practice. And then carrying, obviously they are glass, and so you want to make sure you remember that. And so they come, ours at least come in a hard carrying case. It's a hard plastic, so totally fine. And honestly, when I fly, I throw my filters in their hard cases inside a bigger case in my check bag, and I'm fine with it. I've never had an issue. But, you know, customers will come to us and say, well, my filter broke, you know, and well, how are you carrying it? Well, you know, it was in a soft pouch in my backpack. You know, it is still glass. So just be cautious. But there is tempered glass, like I said. So it does take a lot to break them, but it's possible.
F8, the photographer's perspective, is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life. So one thing I love is I ask, what's your actual title with the company? And you say, professional photographer. Like you said, you guys are actually photographers. So, and this goes along with what you were just saying about carrying your stuff. Like when you go out, you can pick from whatever you want. What's your normal setup that you would carry with you when you're going on a landscape shoot?
Yeah, great question. And typically my go-to setup is a CPL, an ND, or multiple NDs, definitely a 3 and a 6 always. And, you know, if I know I'm going somewhere now, especially after I got that cool shot that I really loved with a 5 minute exposure, I'm kind of sneaking the old 15 stop filter in there as well, just in case. But CPL NDs, and one of the we actually made the world's first dark CPL, and these are awesome, especially for landscape photographers, because in a typical landscape situation like in Yosemite, you're going to be using a polarizer and you're going to be using an ND. So we just decided to make a filter that was both. So it's actually one filter that combines the dark glass of the ND, and but it's polarized, so it's one filter does both. Those are always in my bag, and I just simply love those for landscape work.
And how many stops are they?
So we have 3 and 6 stop available in that, in the dark CPL right now. We will be soon here, pretty soon, expanding into having almost, I think it's even going to be just one stop increments all the way from 1 through 15, or maybe not, but 3 through 15.
Wow. So I can't get like halves. Can't get like a 6.5. I'm just kidding. That's pretty unbelievable if you went every one. The common thinking is that even just a regular polarizer will also give you some effect of the ND filter, maybe one stop or something. Is that true of your filters or no?
Yes, it is. It's true of every polarizing filter. And the reason is because adding that polarizing film onto the filter, it does reduce the light by between 1 and 2 stops is industry standard. Now, I'll tell you a little something about polarizers. Most polarizers, especially the cheaper ones, are going to use off-the-shelf polarizing film. And polarizing film they'll buy from companies like Panasonic or guys that make TV screens. You know, your cell phone has a polarizing film on it. Your monitor has a polarizing film on it. Your TV screen has a polarizing film on it. So most filter manufacturers will actually just buy it straight up from these manufacturers, not meant for photography at all. And they'll just slap that on there. And that's when you get between 1.5 and 2 stops of light lost. Ours is actually the least amount of light lost of any polarizer. It's barely even one stop. And the reason is because we designed and manufactured our own polarizing film specifically for this use case. So we do not buy our polarizing film from these guys, Samsung, Panasonic. We made our own for this. And so that's why we're able to actually achieve basically one stop of light loss as opposed to two.
So in Oregon, there were, I think you said almost like half of the photographers, half of the 15, 16 people we had were part of your breakthrough team that uses those filters. Who were some of those photographers, and who are some of the people we've got coming up in Yosemite and even in Acadia and Moab that use all your stuff?
Yeah, so our pro team is a very important part of our business. You know, we are a very small team. We have 2 designers, 2 engineers, 2 machinists. We're a very small team. And so part of my job is to kind of be that bridge between professional photographers who are out there every day using the stuff and shooting and, you know, and our machinists and our engineers and our designers that are not photographers that make the stuff. You know, we have to bridge that gap on what does it have to do? Why does it have to work this way? What does it have to not do in some cases, you know? And so we've developed a pretty substantial pro team over the course of our time. And really we kind of in the last 6 months or so put together those pros that is about 35 of them, I believe. And they are the guys that have kind of just been with us all through. They will bend over backwards to give us great, really helpful feedback that goes back into the design process, the development process. They'll field test anything we want. They'll give us great feedback. And they've just really gone out of their way to help us. So that's called Team Breakthrough. And like you mentioned, there were 5 or 6 members of Team Breakthrough in Oregon, Nick Page, Gavin Hardcastle, Sean Bagshaw, Aaron Babnick, Rick Salmon, those kind of guys like that. And in Yosemite, I believe we have Jennifer King, Alex Noriega, and then I think in Acadia and Moab, we have Jennifer Renwick, David Kingham,
Sarah Marino, we said.
Yep, those kind of guys. And so it's a really big part of our business, actually, and it's a big part of my job is being that bridge and connecting the world of professional photographers with the non-photographers who design and actually get this stuff built. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the best part, was that you guys had the stuff available and these guys know it better than anyone. And I just think overall, talking to these professional photographers, they are really excited to work with you guys, whether it's with the filters or these new tripods coming out. And, you know, it's, you always want to work with a company that you like and people that you like. And that's been the case for sure with you guys.
Well, and here's the other piece of it too. There's a lot of manufacturers out there that, you know, even if, say, Sean Bagshaw or Aaron Bobnick had some feedback, it would go into some email box. No one would ever read it, and certainly not, probably not even respond. And it certainly wouldn't become part of the product lineup, you know. But, you know, actually 10 minutes before we started this podcast, we had Michael DeYoung, who's one of our Team Breakthrough professionals based in New Mexico. He's an outdoor kind of adventure photographer. I just got out of a 2-hour meeting with him, and we were putting stuff in his lap, and we're saying, what do you think? Like, would you use this? How can we change it? Even down to the knurling on the outside of the filters. And so, no joke, 10 minutes before this podcast started, that's what I was doing. And so, I think pros love it because we're so available. We're there and we actually listen and we incorporate feedback, and we're so small and agile that we can actually do that. And so they love to see their feedback be incorporated, and we love the feedback. So it really works really well.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great for us and it worked out really, really well. I think it was Nick Page that connected us in the first place coming to Oregon. And I'm like, you know, I don't know if this is going to work, because we've always been supported by Hunt's Photo. And Hunt's is like, oh, this would be great. And you guys are like, this would be great. So you guys don't actually sell the product when you're there. You're helping people in the field. But explain, I mean, if they want to actually buy anything at the event, any of these.
Yeah, so it really worked out great, because Hunt's is a retailer of ours anyway. And so we just kind of connected with them and Gary over at Hunt's. And we just said, hey, what about this? You know, you do what you're good at, we'll do what we're good at. And so they essentially will sell our filters. They'll have them there in stock, especially all the ones that you'll be using for sure. And they will take all the sales. And we are free then to just demo, to just talk, to be there and to help. So yeah, if you want to buy filters on the ground in Yosemite, you will be able to do that. And that's kind of cool that we can offer that.
Yeah. Are you guys going to offer a discount?
10%. Yeah. Show discount, 10%. And so every little helps.
No, absolutely. So yeah. So if you're at one of our events, Yosemite, Acadia, Moab, Hunt's will be there. They'll be selling. Matt will be there with his team, and they'll be teaching everyone how to use them in the field and just letting people borrow whatever they want to use. So it's just works great for everyone. And that's my overall job, is to make sure that everyone at the event is supported. And that's why they're coming to these things, to not just get great images, but to have a great experience and to learn how to use these new things. So it works out great for everyone.
Yeah. And I think just logistically, Chris, I know we had talked about hopefully that we can get most of the filters lent out early in these conferences, you know, the kind of the opening night and maybe the next day, just so that everyone can have the maximum use of them. So if you're coming to one of these shows, come find us early in the week, because then we can just get you what you need and set up for the entire conference.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. All right, how about I throw one last question at you that you're not ready for. So this year we're going to Yosemite, as we said, Acadia and Moab, but our fourth conference is at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Do you guys work with flower photographers? Are filters important with botanical flower photography? Look, I'm trying to stump them here. Is it going to work?
It depends. In the words of great Rick Salmon, it depends.
Yes, he does say that.
He does say that. He even has a t-shirt. Says, it does depend. We don't typically, our kind of whole business and our focus as landscape photographers has been landscape photography. But there are a number of people that we work with and good pros that do flower photography. But it very much depends. It's going to be a case of actually polarizers are incredibly useful when you're dealing with greenery, shrubbery, you know, anything like that. There will be reflections probably.
It's just going to take like that shine off of it, right?
It's going to take the shine off, and it will also help to boost the natural contrast. Now, in terms of long exposure, you don't want to do that because then you're going to get blurry right. flowers. And
you're unless you're going for some kind of abstract, but yes, you're right.
Going for that. Yeah, exactly. So polarizing filters is really probably the only one that I would recommend for flower photography, and probably the only one I would bring if I was going to do a flower shoot.
But important, but really important. And the other time that we find them to come in real handy is, I mean, one of the big things we'll be shooting at that event will be water lilies, the lotus flowers that are on the water, and the reflection from the water. That's one of the most drastic changes you can see between taking a picture with your polarizer turned the one way and turn the other, you know, polarizing or not polarizing, where you take that reflection off the water, and it's like now you've got that water lily on this nice, clean, black background. It really stands out. So it's critical in those situations, I feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like we mentioned, you cannot do it any other way.
Exactly. So a good person actually to ask more about that would be Sarah Marino, because she'll be teaching at that Flower and Garden Conference too. So yeah, that's perfect. Can you tell us any secrets about Colorado tripods before we wrap up?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not really a secret, but Colorado.
Oh, come on. Say it's a secret.
Colorado tripod, we're going to be doing titanium versions. We'll be the world's first titanium tripod manufacturer. And that's really exciting because titanium is, it's really hard to work with, but titanium is amazing because it's strong, but yet light. And that's what us as, you know, landscape photographers, adventure photographers need. We need a light setup that can be stable. And tripods are rated on nothing else but stability. If you want a stable tripod, that is the critical piece. So that's going to be really fun. It's really difficult to machine. We've broken many drill bits and things like that, trying to get these titanium things out there. But yeah, that's great. And then the Highline ball head has just been a massive success. And one of the things that I mentioned, that the tripod industry really hasn't changed a whole lot. If you own a ball head, the chances are it drops the window that you can drop it down into a vertical composition is only 90 degrees. And so that's the way it's always been. And we looked at that and thought, well, that's dumb. Why would we not want a little more than 90 degrees so that if your tripod legs are not completely straight, you have some leeway to get that vertical 90 degree shot. And so that's one of the cool things about the Highline, is that it has that drop window that is expanded past 90 degrees so that you can do that. And then our other product, which is yet to be actually launched, is the Aspen ball head. And that is a very revolutionary, very new design of ball head. And essentially, it only has two cups on the side that hold the ball, and the rest of it is completely open. So you have a massive range of motion on that, so that you can go way past 90, way even past the Highline. So we're just trying to think about things differently and try and innovate where the industry has not been much innovation for quite a while. So That's a fun project to work on. I do love working on the tripods and the ball heads. It's fun.
You said earlier, like, how with a tripod, you might buy the cheap Walmart one or whatever, and eventually you get a nice one. You realize, you know, I should have just started with this. And that's the story that all photographers tell. I thought it was really interesting in Oregon that Gavin Hardcastle said the opposite. He goes, you know, this is pretty much just as good as the really right stuff or whatever that I had before. But he said, you know what, whether it's this or it's Colorado tripod or it's a really right stuff, I'm going to kill it in 3 years. I know that I am. So I don't want to spend $2,000 on it to get that. So I was like, that's interesting. That's kind of the opposite of what you hear most people say. So.
Yeah, for sure. There's actually a good point there. And the point is all of your, and it's not just tripods or filters, it's all of it. Every piece of gear that you have for landscape photography, use it, take it to places, bash it up. That's what it's for, right?
It's a tool.
It's a tool to get the images that you want. So, I totally agree with Gavin on that piece. But typically you do want to invest in a good tripod, because it's like putting cheap road tires on a Ferrari. You don't want to do that, you know? You're just gonna hurt your image quality that you've just spent $3,000-$4,000 on a camera and lens setup. You know, it just doesn't. And I see it all the time out in the field, and it pains me. It really does, because I'm like, gosh, here, try this. And they're like, whoa.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right. So where can we find out more information, look up the different models that we might have? Or you even said that you've got like different tests on your website as well. Where would you send people?
Sure. So Breakthrough, just Google Breakthrough Photography. We're right there. And we even have some kind of educational material that we've put together as well. For example, up on the top bar there, where you can see all of our products, there's even an ND buying guide. So if you really have no idea what to do and no idea where to start there. We also have a 52-page long exposure guide. So maybe even start there first. And then when you've read that, then go to the ND buying guide to find out which one is for you. They're just educational tools, really, to kind of expand on what we've been talking about here, and just to go in depth and show images and talk about that. Under the About section on our website, you can find our Team Breakthrough, and you can find all the guys we've mentioned and kind of browse their amazing work and see the guys that we work with. And then Performance Gallery is where you can see the difference between a non-color neutral filter and a color neutral filter. And so that's that tab up there, Performance Gallery. Shows you kind of images with all of our competitor products, and you can be the judge of which raw files you would rather enter into Lightroom.
All right, that's all great. I can't wait to hang out with you just in a few days here coming up next week, and people have a chance to use all this stuff and get to work with you. And if they're in Moab or Acadia, same thing. So yeah, we'll see you next week, Matt.
Sounds great, Chris. Yeah, really looking forward to it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, we will see you next week. Thank you very much for doing the show. F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.